serving up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there. Welcome to our house. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Dino in for Jason Gibbs today. There he is, the man, the legend, Al Saunders walking by. I love Al Saunders.
How do you not?
He's the greatest.
He's a 60-something going on 20-something.
I can't wait till we get him on the show.
That would be great. Well, and KG said he rocked their retreat.
Yeah. He's dominant. He's the best.
He is. He loves his job.
We'll get him on here, and we'll have like 15-minute segment, and it'll be a two-hour show. Easy with Al Saunders.
Good, like a gribble. We'll have to double the breaks.
Double the breaks. Triple the breaks. We'll have to get them all together. Some news out of the NBA. It is being reported that the Cavs, as part of a three-team deal, will be sending Anderson Varejão out and bringing in Channing Frye, the tall center who can shoot the trifecta. Matt Wilhelm can help space the floor for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Don't we have Kevin Love for that?
Channing Frye coming to help space the floor.
Oh, thank you.
For the Cleveland Cavaliers. But, you know, when you go small, though, for example, against, it gives you another scoring option.
It does, but he can't guard a lick on defense. And that's out of the words of Brian Windhorst this morning on The Really Big Show. Can't cover anybody.
He's not a stopper. He's my guy from the U of A. I'm an Arizona Wildcat fan from the U of A, and hopefully he comes in and does a good job. Now, we do have a big show for you here today. That's the one rumor right now on the Cavs or the report. We'll let you know as we hear more on that. Today, Ray Horton just spoke with the media. We'll have that for you at 1:30. Pep Hamilton, the Browns senior offensive assistant, at 2 o'clock. And at 2:30, special teams coach Chris Tabor. Now, today is also a big day because you and I, Matt Wilhelm, at the conclusion of this show, are going to go one-on-one on the Wonderlic test.
Challenge.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
What do you think about that? Do you remember taking the Wonderlic test?
I do remember taking the Wonderlic test. It's, 50 questions in 5 minutes, I believe?
I was told 12 minutes by my man Beasley.
Okay, then maybe it is 12 minutes. But what I do recall is that, A, that I didn't finish the test. Okay, so I didn't get through the 50 questions, if it is, in fact, 50 questions.
Advantage the girl.
Right. Advantage the girl. That's fine. I have no problem losing to you, first of all. Okay, I'm going to put that out there. But what I do recall was I scored a 27 or 28.
That's good.
It's very good.
That's really
but
good.
But I only got through like 34 questions.
Oh, God.
So I went slow and answered them right instead of going fast and, you know.
Like, isn't like low 30s as high as anybody ever does at the combine?
Well, I don't know.
I think so.
Maybe so.
I think like when people score in the low 30s, 31, 32, that's like
really
a
good.
Big deal.
It's not Ryan Fitzpatrick good.
No, he's a genius.
He's a genius.
He's from Harvard. We'll do that today. We're going to get that video put together by our fine folks in Dog Pound Productions, and we'll have that for you on cleanbrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. I'm looking forward to it. I want to get out there. I was talking last night. We were able to have dinner. Some of the talent that worked this year. We had a big dinner thrown by Kevin Griffin, which was a ton of fun. Yeah, at Bold, which was very good downtown. Yep. You and I had Kobe Tomahawk ribeyes that were –
You go to my Facebook page.
And you put the picture on there?
I put a picture
solid.
On there.
Yes, it was big. It was strong.
Fred Flintstone-ish.
And it's been good to us over the course of 2 days.
All I asked for when he asked for my order was, give me the man steak.
Yeah, that's what you said. It was great.
Give me the grown man steak. He knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, there was only one on the menu.
There's only one. Sirloin filet. Give me the man steak.
And we did have, maybe 10 people?
10. It was exactly 10.
10 people. We ordered, I want to say about... I was put in charge of the app ordering, and I think we went through about 50 apps.
There was probably 30.
But we went through absolutely everything.
Yes.
There was
even
one.
Even some of the bread got touched.
There was one wing that was hanging on for a while. Was that you that got it?
Baskin got it. It sat there.
Sat there for a
to
while.
To the point where it got cold.
Yeah.
And Baskin picks it up, and he looks at me. He goes, I just couldn't help myself. They were good. Everything was great. Bold. Down at the old Ken Stewart's location.
Yep.
Right underneath Aloft. Very, very good restaurant.
Strong. Yeah, I would recommend. Their
and
apps
server's
really
name
good.
Was?
Michel. I think he was like French Canadian, maybe.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes.
Also known as Michael.
In other parts of the world.
In other parts of the world, meaning the world that we live in?
Not in his,
but,
no.
Not in his world. Not in his world.
He was solid. He did a fine job.
He did a good job.
He kept the bourbon coming.
Not a healthy tip.
I'm sure he had a strong tip on that bill. Fortunately, it wasn't my tip.
Actually, probably anything over six, it was automatically 20%.
Yeah. For party 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Strong.
He's strong. To quite strong. For
I was
me,
all
Joe,
over the place.
Night.
I had a...
What were you drinking last night?
I had a vodka soda to start.
Okay.
And then I went to a Moscow Mule. And then when the steak came, I went with the red cab.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Yeah, way to tie it in at the end.
Yeah.
Classy.
Classy.
It is apparently today is National Wine Day. I don't know if you knew that. So
I'll have to chug a bottle.
You can dial it up again. Sure. Sure. Why not? So that's what we did last night. Today, again, the Wonderlic test. And we're going to have all the coordinators for you. And you and I had the opportunity now, just kind of a little spoiler alert or a teaser. We'll call it a teaser trailer. We got to hear Ray Horton. And I was struck by two things with Ray Horton. Number one, that he was under contract to Tennessee. He got out of his contract to come here. And the two reasons he cited were Hugh Jackson.
Correct.
And his love affair with the city and people of Cleveland. I mean, and it was clear that it was not, that wasn't, he said it enough times in different ways. He loved the fans and
he
wants
did.
To come back here and give the fans the winner that he feels that they deserve. And he loves the way the fans treated him here and basically wanted to come back and coach for the fans of the Cleveland
Browns. Yeah, and I really believe, as he alludes to multiple times as well, is some of the players that he coached in 13 still being here. And he probably feels with his magic touch and the steps that they take with some of the young talent and the opportunity to draft and sign free agents is got to be very appealing to him, and looks as the Cleveland Browns, just as Hugh Jackson does, as a franchise that's heading in the right direction. And he might not thought that about the Tennessee Titans, even with, you know, the second overall pick last year, the first overall pick this year. They're not trending as high as the Cleveland Browns in his eyes.
No, and he's here now, and I was here doing this show when Ray Horton was here, and he sounds like a different guy. He sounds like a guy who is not been humbled, I don't think that's the right word, but who has more perspective for the task at hand and more perspective on just the way that the NFL works, and that he has an opportunity now to come back here for these fans and get things done the way that he wants to get them done. And the other key takeaway that I want to talk about was basically, without saying it and throwing people under the bus, he said everything that you've been saying over the last year from talking to players on the team, everything that I've been saying about this defense and specifically the run defense, that he basically made it clear guys are going to have jobs. They're going to have gap assignments. There are going to be times when your job is to go in there, fill this gap against two blockers so that somebody else can scrape and make the play, as opposed to mass chaos. I mean, he said it as clearly as possible that it's on the coaches to make sure the players know their assignments.
Correct.
And then it's on the players to execute and do their job in those assignments. But he said he wants to make it clear they will know what their jobs are.
Correct. And that's, to me, as you mentioned, what I've been saying all along. And I just think, to even, you know, wrap an analogy around it, if you were to take a job, you know, someone, you get hired or fired or promoted, and they give you a job description, in most cases, all the time, unless you own your own business and make your own hours. When you go get a job and work for someone else, which these players do, working for these coaches and for this organization, you get a job description and you go execute that job description. And if you don't, what happens? A, the company will lose money, and B, very soon after that, you will be out of a job, okay? So give someone a clear picture of what exactly they want to do. Someone asked, I think it was Andrew Gribble, asked the Danny Shelton question, you know, about his role in a Ray Horton defense. I brought up my expectations of Danny Shelton in a Ray Horton defense, and I think it was Kevin Griffin and I talking about it last night at dinner. Danny Shelton needs to play in a phone booth and own that phone booth. And as you said, and we'll hear it from Ray, the one thing that I also liked and what immediately pops into my head towards the end of his press conference is, guys are going to be asked to do tasks that are the dirty work, the grimy, but it has to be done as a step in this defense to allow the elite players, as he constantly references, you know, that are on this defense, to be able to do their jobs and make the sacks, the picks, the pass breakups, to allow this defense to make that one stop that wins you a football game instead of always giving up that play that essentially loses you a football game and puts the game in jeopardy. I like that about where his head's at.
I do too. And the other thing he said is He's not taking his best players off the field. Last year, we talked about the mass substitutions, play after play after play. We went through the numbers of the good defenses and the snap percentages of their core players and how different it was from what the Browns were doing. He made it pretty clear, I want Danny Shelton on the field every single snap. I want my best players on the field every single snap. That's how you play continuity, familiarity, knowing their role, and getting it done.
Yeah, and I think the best thing about it is...
And it's funny that sounds like rocket science after everything that we've heard for the last 2 years.
I know. It sounds a heck of a lot like, you know, what we've been talking about for the last 2 years. And really what it boils down to...
Have fun, 49ers.
Is, yeah, thank you. guys... Not only having an understanding, but earning the right to not come off the field. And that was something that I had to learn.
Yep.
Because at Ohio State, and ironically, with all the hype centered around Joey Bosa and his tackle for loss and how destructive he is along that defensive front, I had to look up some of, you know, I went back to Ohio State and looked up some stats because, you know, now that Bosa's got a bunch of tackle for losses and Shazier was a tackle for loss machine, I went back and I think I ranked 7th all time at Ohio State in tackles for loss. But my whole point in saying that is my sophomore and junior year, I was a starter at middle linebacker, but only played first and second down. So I would come off the field in those nickel and dime situations, and it chapped my you-know-what to earn the right to stay on the field and evolve as a linebacker, which
You're
I did.
Hyde.
Right. Yeah, right.
You're
which I did as a senior. And I was a three-down linebacker when I had my most productive year with the most tackle for loss and so on and so forth. And I think it's these guys understanding the scheme first. And as I said all the time last year was having a coach and player relationship where your job can be communicated and the exact expectations of coach to player and player to coach are being voiced consistently so that there is no gray area.
Right.
In that player by himself, and I become 1/11th of what we do 60-plus times in a football game on the field. Just do my 1/11th and trust my teammates to be their 1/11th. And then if you get 11, and that's all Denver is. They have great players. But all of them doing their job at a high level more than the other team allows them to function and operate at a level that no one has seen in a very long time, which is why, you know, even some of the rankings I saw come out yesterday, they rank 3rd all-time in defense behind the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens, and boom, the Denver Broncos of 2015.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. So we'll talk about that. Also, we will talk about Mel Kiper's second mock draft released today. He has the Browns taking Carson Wentz at number 2. However, he says, we still have a couple of months to debate whether this will be Wentz or Jared Goff. So he believes that those two guys are going to be battling it out for the top quarterback spot. He then has Jared Goff going 4th overall to the Dallas Cowboys. He believes that Jared Goff is the top quarterback on the board, but he has the Browns taking Wentz, thinks they'll be enamored with his big arm. I think the Browns will take the top quarterback on their board when it all is said and done. The interesting thing about his draft, 2 quarterbacks in the top 4, you know whose name does not get called in this mock draft in the first round?
Who?
Paxton Lynch. Out of the first round for Mel Kiper in his most recent mock draft. Zeke Elliott, those wondering, Zeke Elliott goes to the Houston Texans.
What, 22? 23?
22 in this one. Joey Bosa goes...
5th to Jacksonville?
No. 6th to the Baltimore Ravens. That is not what Browns fans want. That is like guarantees that he would be a superstar. The Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers. In his mock draft, since people are wondering about our division, the Cincinnati Bengals get Josh Dotson out of TCU, the wide receiver who many people
think... I've
also
seen Braxton Miller and other mocks linked to the Bengals as well.
Who many people think would go to the Browns. And then Pittsburgh gets Kendall Fuller, the cornerback, out of Virginia Tech.
Good player. Michael Thomas beat him on the double move in the opening week of the season, if you recall.
I do recall that. Michael Thomas, not in the first round, so it'll be interesting. Paxton Lynch should be there at 32 if you're the Browns. Do you you get...
Double dip?
Do you go...
Wentz, Lynch, Goff, Lynch?
Goff, Lynch, and say...
I'm all in. You can find a guy.
I'm finding a guy in this draft.
It's fine.
I'd be fine with it.
If you can go get... If you get Josh Gordon reinstated and you go add talent and playmakers, I wouldn't hate it.
I wouldn't hate it either. Noah Spence, by the way... Top 10 in this draft. It seems like this is a guy who, remember, at one point it seemed realistic that he could go 32nd. that the Browns would have a shot at him? No way. The guy's going top 10 talent there. So a lot to talk about. The coordinators, the only one that we've gotten to hear so far is Ray Horton. We will have him for you at 1:30, 2 o'clock, senior offensive assistant Pep Hamilton at 2:30, Browns special teams coordinator Chris Tabor. 2:15, we'll do the 2015 Browns position review six-pack, and we'll get those questions from our guy Dino today in for Gibbs. All right, when we come back, we'll get into all the topics and get rolling here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura Wilhelm and Dino in for Jason Gibbs. We're going to go to the phones right now. Let's go to Danny in Dalton. Danny, welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man.
Hey, I just want to talk really quick about, I'm really happy with, the new coaches and everything. By the way, it's, my first time calling.
Awesome, man.
I'm really
Thank
happy
you very
to
much.
Get through. But, number one, we're not going to get Joey Bosa, who would be, I'd love to have because our defense was so weak last year. But once again, we're going to need a quarterback. And either way you look at it, we're taking Goff out of US or UCLA or Cal, wherever he's from. But yeah. Yes. And the other thing I was going to say was I keep hearing about the Jim Brown statue and how people are getting mad because of all the stuff he had, criminal record or whatever. But we're the best fans in the NFL. If anything, we could actually get our own money together and build up a Paul Brown statue ourselves and just donate it to the team. But anyway, guys, that's all I really wanted to say.
Thanks for your time, man. Appreciate the call. Thank you for listening. And on your last point, I have no inside information. But I believe if you read into the press release about Jim Brown's statue, that there are more dedications, there's more appreciation, there's more, maybe more statues to come. I think it's
yes.
Paul Brown is probably at the top beyond Jim Brown of a very short list.
Yes.
So
it's going to happen.
It's not going to take the fans of Cleveland to put their money together. It's just a matter of time.
It is going to happen. Let's go to Paul in Parma now. Paul, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to refute the point. I keep hearing this narrative about taking two quarterbacks within the first couple of picks, and I don't get that mentality. I mean, this is Cleveland. The most popular guy is always the backup quarterback. The last thing I want to do is draft Jared Goff or something like that, put the entire franchise behind this guy, which is what I think we need to do as a franchise, pick the guy, stick with him, and go with him, and then have Paxton Lynch or whoever waiting in the weeds, so the first time the guy throws a couple of picks, everyone starts calling their name, and you have a quarterback controversy. I understand.
That's a fair point. I just want to get a quarterback, and I want to get it right. If
absolutely.
You have an opportunity to do that,
and essentially it's two
great
swings at the plate.
Right.
Right?
Yes. I believe you get Goff, and you're good. That's just how I feel about it, so I'm hoping that that's the case, that we go out there, we draft Goff. I think that and we've heard from a lot of people, maybe his ceiling isn't as high as a Lynch or a Wentz down the road. Perhaps. Maybe it is. You don't know.
I don't even think it matters if Goff is the right guy or not. The important thing is that for 3 to 4 years, you'll have coach and quarterback married, and that'll let you build continuity, which is what the organization needs the most.
100%.
I agree. Totally.
Thanks, guys.
Yep,
thank you very much. Appreciate that call there. I think it's a very good point, and I think that getting that franchise quarterback paired with the coach and having them work together, and a guy like Pep Hamilton who's worked with Andrew Luck, who's worked with good quarterbacks. He's been a quarterback coach billions of times in this league. I think it's going to be great to have him to help bring this young guy along, as well as Josh McCown.
I agree, and I think the point that he made about Coach Hugh Jackson and potential franchise quarterback being drafted at number 2 overall and the two of them being linked for the next 3 to 4 years at minimum here in Cleveland, that's why I think for me personally, for you, for all of our listeners and every Browns fan should be very in tune to this new regime's approach to the offseason, both in free agency, how they're drafting, if you show up for training camp or in tune to coverage throughout training camp, what we're doing now, because you can't expect to, build the Coliseum in one day, you know what I mean, or in one season. You want to show progress. How aggressive is Hugh Jackson going to get or how aggressive is Ray Horton and this defense going to get in year one, knowing that we want to win, but you want to build sustainable winning teams. You want to go, again, that's 3-13 to 6-10, 7-9, and then you're competing here for your division in 2017. I think it'd be a stretch for you to potentially compete for your division in 1 year without having something and go all in like teams have to do, like you said, to win a Super Bowl, to win your division, and spend the type of money, sign those types of free agents. And then there's always going to be a little bit of fall off. And you're going to see that a little bit even in Denver, you know, a little kind of a hangover after winning a Super Bowl with the flux of Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler, you know, maintaining, you know, Malik Jackson and some of their other young stars that they have there.
Well, and the hard thing is, too, when you're a Super Bowl team, your guys get paid big in free agency. They want to leave and chase that money. They've got the ring, and it's tough to keep your team together. Let's go to Tim in Cleveland. Now, Tim, welcome to the show.
Good today.
How you doing?
Good. You know, it seems like no one is really happy with the choices. You know, there's quarterbacks were throwing names out left and right. You know, I just assume wait, and there's no expectations.
I'm real happy.
And stay with what we got, and you got Deshaun Watson, I think, from Clemson coming out next year, you know, Cam Newton-type quarterback, you know, got franchise guy.
But how can you count on getting him, because you'll probably need the number one overall pick to get him?
Oh, I don't disagree, but if we keep what we've got, I mean, except, you know, if we don't do anything, you know, like they always say, if you do nothing at all, you can't expect anything different. So if we stay a path of what we've got, we can expect a 3-13 season again next year, which puts us up at the top. I mean, there's no guarantees, but it just seems like no matter what station you listen to or what show you listen to, there's not one guy that everybody can agree on. So that being said, you know, I don't know who else is coming out next year besides Watson.
Well, I'll tell you this. So far we've had on our show, we've had Pro Football Focus, we've had Sports Illustrated. I know for
NFL Network.
For ESPN, we've had NFL sure. Network. They all have Goff at the top of their boards.
They do.
So
right. There
is some consensus with Goff. I think Wentz is kind of the it guy right now. We'll see what happens at the combine when they throw head-to-head. And, I don't even know how much you can use of that to tell what's going forward, but I do think that there is a guy, and that's why everybody's here, and that's why all the research is going to be put forward to finding that guy, and I think they'll be just fine.
Yep.
Let's go to Alex in Cleveland now. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, I just saw the latest ESPN mock draft. I don't know who it was, Kuiper or McKay.
Kuiper's, yes.
They had the Browns take it Wentz at number two.
Yep.
I haven't seen the tape, but I wanted to know what you guys thought. What makes this kid so appealing at the number two overall pick? Is it his arm strength, footwork, accuracy, speed? Because really, I mean, you think about it, no one in Ohio really pays attention to FCS football, at least that I know of.
Sure.
So I was wondering if you guys see the tape. And first-time caller, by the way. So,
What you guys thought about him? So Carson Wentz, when I watch him, I see a guy who's a little bit raw from the competition level, but I see a big, strong arm. I see a better athlete than you expect. His ability to run the football is very good, to make plays with his legs as well as his arm. Great size, 6'5", well-built, well-constructed. From my study of him, because of the level he was playing at, he locked onto his primary read a lot, and it was open a lot because of the level they played
talent.
At. Don't forget, when he got hurt this year, I think he missed 8 games with a broken wrist, they went undefeated. They didn't lose a game.
Right.
This is a program that's won, I believe, 5 straight FCS championships. It's 4 or 5. So it's tough when you see him. Physically, does he seem to have all the gifts and traits? Yes. I think the biggest question for Wentz, and something that I know he did well at the Senior Bowl, though, was conduct himself in the classroom. I know he did a good job there, showed a good knowledge and understanding of things. On his tape, when you watch him, you don't see a guy who had to go through whole field progressions and who had to make reads. He did play from under center much more than Goff, who played in that bear raid offense and really wasn't under center at all. And Goff played in a very simple offense. Now, what you saw Goff do was take simple offense and execute sometimes complex plays. And his ability, as you and I watched that Utah game, there was one play that was supposed to be a bubble screen out to the right. Then it was the tight end down the right seam, and he came all the way back and found his third option on the left side of the field on a comeback and was able to pick up a first down. You don't see a lot of that from Wentz, but what you see is a guy that's got immense physical talent. The guy that he reminds me of physically, probably a little bit of a better runner, but physically reminds me of kind of a Blake Bortles. That's kind of what I see from him. Now, Blake Bortles put up gaudy numbers this year, but if you watch his tape, Blake Bortles made some horrific decisions with the football, and his mental game is not where I would like it. I think you win as a quarterback between your ears, as provided you have the requisite physical skills. That's where you win. And to me, that's what separates Jared Goff from every other quarterback in this draft class. Mentally, like Teddy Bridgewater. We had somebody who was on here that we had that said he was mentally like Andrew Luck.
Wentz?
No, Goff.
I don't know.
Somebody compared him. I'll have to look back in on my Twitter. It was on my Twitter. I'll look that up. But anyway, that's what I see. That's a difference that I see, and that's what makes him stand out to me, Goff versus Wentz. Now, he's not physically the same as Wentz, and I think for Goff, the most important thing at this combine is going to be his measurements. What does he measure in? What's his weight? What's his hand size? Because people are obsessed with that. So I think that's going to be the key for him.
And I think the news that either you reported or someone else reported that he's put on 10, 12 pounds, that's only going to help him.
Yep.
To be able to run the 40 that they see fit for a quarterback, you know, a pocket passer that can, you know, obviously be mobile in the pocket, you know, to add on 10, 12 pounds and not get slower or to have your, you know, ruin your footwork by being a little sluggish is only going to help Goff.
Yeah, he's just got to go. And he's a guy who moves around the pocket very, very well. He's got to do, basically what he's got to do is increase his functional strength and his ability to absorb contact.
Correct.
And be able to make throws with contact. And if he does that, I think that he certainly has the arm strength. We've seen that. So it's exciting. The combine is coming up, and we'll get to see all of these guys. Now, when we return here on this show, let's get to Nate in Columbus, and then when we come back, we'll have Ray Horton, the Browns defensive coordinator's press conference from earlier today. Nate, welcome.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Good, man.
I just have a quick question for you guys. I understand what you guys were just saying about Goff and how he plays. The only thing that I have a question on is, who would you rather have with the pick? Would you rather have Goff, Wentz, or Lynch? Just, you know, I know they're all kind of different style quarterbacks. One's more of a pocket passer. One's more a little bit mobile. The third one's absolutely mobile. Which one would you rather have at this moment?
For me, it's no question Goff. Number two is Wentz, and then I don't think you pick Lynch at number two as the Cleveland Browns.
No. Agreed.
So
thank you for the call.
That's the way I see it there. By the way, Tony Grossi reporting, I wouldn't be surprised if the Browns lock up Travis Benjamin to a new contract very, very soon.
It's good.
Tony Grossi reporting that. ESPN Cleveland's Tony Grossi. When we come back, we're going to hear from Ray Horton, second go-around, Redemption Tour. Here in Cleveland with the Football Browns on Cleveland Browns Daily, ESPN at 50 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Take on Varejao's deal. The pick that Cleveland sent to Portland will be a 2018 first-round pick. League sources tell The Vertical, says Woj. By the way, guy who's gaining a little bit of steam, Dak Prescott, Daniel Jeremiah, saying, the more I study Dak Prescott, the more I like him. Impressed with his poise. By the way, before we get to Ray Horton, did you see Jared Allen's retirement video?
Amazing.
Awesome.
The only thing that could have been better
if there was,
an actual sunset.
Yeah.
But I thought, I mean, it's his property, his horse, that hat, that jacket, nothing more than 20 seconds, and him riding away.
Do you think, Dino... Did you see that video?
I did.
Did you love it?
I thought it was awesome.
You know what I found online? And this is just for people who are fans of football that put a number that someone spits out at the combine, whether, you know, obnoxiously fast or slow in Danny Shelton's case, or a low bench number or a high bench number. Jared Allen, 12-year pro, probably is ranked, what, top 15 all-time sacks?
Yeah.
Okay. 13 reps on the bench press at the combine.
That's all he did?
Yep.
Wow.
So,
don't you think the bench press is kind of overrated?
No.
Like, what is that? What does it matter for football?
Huh?
Bench press.
Strength?
Strength matters, right? But I think there are other measures of strength other than
a bench
press.
That's why you do more than bench press in 40.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I would rather have a guy who has more kind of like an explosive power clean or whatever. Like, when do you ever go like this in football?
Never rigid like that on a bench press. But right. It is the same way that, why 40 yards? Why not? Do you ever run 40? Does Danny Shelton ever run 40 yards? Hopefully not, because if the guy's really breaking a touchdown, Danny's got to chill and just run to the sideline.
That's why I like the short shuttle.
Right. That's my whole point. But you run the 40 because, A, this is what a lot of people don't know about the 40-yard dashes. A, it's the best way to gauge speed. Duh. Uh-huh. That's the no-brainer. The other thing that I found out after the combine, actually throughout my career, and the reason why when you bring in prospects, you know, to or guys throughout the season, some teams have you run a 40 is because if you're running the 40 as fast as you can, you can't hide any injuries. You know, a lingering hamstring pull or an Achilles injury or a foot injury, those will show up by you going all out in a 40-yard dash. And the bench press is just the standard for which you can test someone's strength.
But don't you think, like, there are certain people, like, the bench press is going to favor...
Oh, I mean, for me, I did 19 at 225, but I've got extremely long arms, and I don't have a barrel chest.
Yeah.
You know, so, yes, the defensive lineman with the T-Rex arms and the big barrel chest, you know, he's moving it 8 to 10 inches, and I'm moving it, you know,
it's like
18.
It's like doing a decline.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So, absolutely. But that's all taken into account.
Sure.
It is just it's a standard. And that is really what the combine is. It's all 32 teams are there with their brass, and every prospect that they feel deserves to be there, showcasing their ability with the same weights and the same bar on the same bench, on the same turf, with the same cones, with the same electronic timer, you know, so that it's not whose thumb is fastest.
I want to know
how standard.
How much they curl for the girl. Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
They don't.
All right. Let's hear from the new defensive coordinator again of the Cleveland Browns, Ray Horton.
Have you kept in contact with any, Joe Hayden or Gibson, any of those guys?
No, only obviously when we see him on the field because of, you know, NFL rules and everything. But, you know, we played you guys, and it was good seeing them on the field. And obviously we watched them because you become attached to players on a personal level, and you want them to do well in football and in life, except for when they're playing against you. But, yeah, I watch them, all of them, from afar.
Ray, Tayshaun Gibson came of age a little bit under you before you left here the first time. You know, what have you thought of him since you guys have kind of parted, and would you like to see the Browns keep him?
Really, after I left, just kind of watched. And when the games came across, you know, in exchange, or just when you had a little free time, you go back to watch. I always, from the moment I met him, appreciated his ability on the field and really in the classroom. Some things don't get translated. You don't see that. But I loved who he was as a young man. And I believe he's a free agent. And those things in the NFL business take care of themselves. But I've always appreciated him when I was in the building, and I appreciated him from afar.
Hey, first of all, is it still big guys who can run and little guys who can hit?
No question. The NFL hasn't changed. When you watch the Super Bowl and the AFC Championship game, it was a factor of big men that could run coming around that edge. And then also, it's always little guys that can get them on the field. And until they change the rules or tweak the rules a little bit, it's still NFL football. And you've got to either get the ball or get the guy with the ball on the ground. And, you know, we're going to preach that. And from day one, we're going to preach what we do. You know, we're going to try to pressure the quarterback. As Coach Hugh has mentioned more than once, we do. We want to be suffocating. And when we're in this division, on the defensive side of the ball, you have to be. I mean, this is a tough, big man division. You better be ready to play football on Sunday, or you're going to be embarrassed.
Talk about, I mean, the emotions. You hear one year, Chud got fired after one year. There's a lot of criticism about that. Now you're back. Is there any oddity? Was there any emotional reaction 2 years ago?
No, not for me. Sure, there was emotion. The day it happened, you want to do a great job for your employer, for yourself, for your players, for the fans, and this business is it's a win now business. It's really changed over the years. It's evolved, and I think when you do, in my opinion, when you do a good job and somebody recognizes it, that's what you want. And sometimes it's the fans, it's the players, it's your head coach, it's your owner. And I think by the fact that I'm sitting here is that somewhere, at some level, somebody appreciated something. Now, you'd have to ask that somebody who that would be, whether, you know, who that is, I don't know. But obviously, Mr. Haslam is our boss. And even after I left, kept in contact with him. We were down in Tennessee. His headquarters is in Knoxville. I drove by. It's up on the hill. Took a picture, sent him a text. Stopped at his gas station out in Oregon on a trip on the drive up in the middle of nowhere, Oregon, and he knew exactly where I was talking about. So you build relationships, and that's part of the thing. When I was in the Nashville airport, a fan coming by and saying something, you hope you do a great job for your people. In my case, it's the owner, it's the team, and it's the fans.
Hey, Coach, what kind of job do you have?
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. What kind of job do you have in front of you, you know, from the way you had them playing when you were here and what they've done the last couple of years since you haven't been here and now you're back?
Well, it's different, and every year it's different in the league. It's a task. We've got a lot of work to do. I'm excited. The guys last year, as we watched film on the guys, they played hard. They really did. And we've got to improve. We have to improve. And in the NFL, there's a book, Who Moved My Cheese? Really, that's what it is. It's about change, constant change in the NFL. And, you know, there's going to be change no matter what happens in this business. And we've got to find a way to become a suffocating championship defense. And that's what we're trying to do. Do we have work? Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
When you look back at when you were here before, do you look at your defense and say, we could have done this better, we could have done that better? And if so, what do you think you could have done better?
From a simple answer, I would say finish. And that's what this business is about. The ebb and flow of the games, of the season, we just need to finish better. Now, what does that mean this year? I don't know what that means, but we've got to finish what we start.
You guys drafted Ortiz early when you were here. I mean, probably his best year under you. What have you seen when you watch film since you've been gone? Do you still think he can be a difference maker coming off the edge?
I hope so. I hope when we get him back in the building on April 4th, we've got he's a tall, lean, fast young man that we've got to utilize that. Now, what do we have on the table for him? Some things different than it's been in the past. And hopefully he will come in and say, I embrace what you're trying to do with me, and I'll do whatever you ask me to do. But we've got to do something to utilize his God-given ability.
Do you see him as an edge rusher?
I see him hopefully as a playmaking member of our defense. Where he'll line up, I don't know yet. It depends on what he can handle for us.
How does a player like Dan Shelton fit with what you want to do on defense?
I saw Danny at the University of Washington, and Danny was the not the first person that contacted me, but the first player that came in. And Danny can be a unique player for us. He's really, really bright, intelligent, very outgoing. He wants to do well. He wants to succeed. He wants to be a part of a championship defense, and we're going to try to give him every opportunity to do that. One of the things I don't want for Danny is I don't want him to always have to come off the field. I want him to be able to stay on the field as much as we want him on the field. And he came in. I just talked to him. You know, I met him. I said, I'm looking forward to working with you on April 4th. And he's going to be a big part of our plans. Obviously, he was our number one draft pick last year, and we want to utilize his talent.
What do you have to do to get better in the red zone, Ray?
Keep them out of the red zone. in the league, what you have to do when you get down there is obviously the first thing is make them kick field goals. If they get down there, they're probably going to score something. unless you turn the ball over. So first of all, we want to keep them out, and that's not a flippant answer. But when you get down there, what you're looking to do now is make them attempt a field goal. Now, what do you do when you get down there to do it? Well, you play what you do. We've had success down there on our defenses, and sometimes we have not. But everything we do is dictated by our players. Who do you have? What do they do best? Our roster will change with free agency, plus and minus, meaning we may lose somebody, we may gain somebody with the draft. So as we sit here now, we're going to be a fluid team because we're going to have, I don't know what we'll have when we line up on September 11th or September 12th, whenever the season starts. We need to improve on a lot of areas when you look back, but all we're trying to do is get, whether it's 53 guys, whether it's 25 guys, whether it's 90 guys, whenever we get our roster set, whether it's starting April 4th or whether it's starting the first game of the season, we want guys that are going to be in the huddle with us, meaning our kind of guys, guys that are going to be aggressive, guys that are going to run, guys that are going to hit and do what we want them to do and go play football. And it'll be changing.
Sorry. One guy you came in after you, Chris Kirksey, what have you seen on him on tape?
Mm-hmm.
Going a third-year pro, drafting the third round, what do you see in him?
A young athletic linebacker that we want to get. We obviously want our players to get better, and even elite players can get better. And that's what we're going to preach to them the first day that we come in. We have to get better, no matter who you are sitting in that chair, whether you're a starter that's been in the league for a while that has a Super Bowl ring, or whether you're a young free agent. We need you guys to get better. And Chris is one of those guys. He's going to be probably a starter for us. And we'll continue to show them film of other players on other teams. This is what we want. And one of the things we're going to try to impart with our players is this is how champions do it. This is how champions do it. And there's a way on the field and off the field to do things.
That's part one of Ray Horton's press conference, the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. We'll have part two at 2 o'clock. Right now, we'll take a break. When we come back, get your reaction to what you heard there in that first part of the press. Or 216-578-0850. Zagura and Wilhelm, Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging on the hook outside your door.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Is this one of your songs? Well,
no. No.
What is this? Is
it's Foo Fighters. Is this? This must be a Gibbs song.
This is horrible.
I respect the Foo.
I do.
I respect the fight. I like Dave Grohl.
Yeah. Let's listen to it on someone else's show. We don't have to claim it.
I like
it.
When he did that one video where he was pretending to eat Mentos. All right. We're going to go back to the phones. Randall in Manchester. Randall, how are you?
Hello?
What's up, man? Yo.
I just wanted to give my take on the Ray Horton interview in the first part.
Sure, great.
Every year I go through this, we listen to I get amped up thinking, our team is great. Like this year, I was so disappointed. But when you hear the professionalism that Ray Horton comes through, when the greatest answer he gave, what are you going to do in the red zone? Keep them out of the red zone? That was awesome, man, because that's exactly the mentality that we didn't have last year. And when he says that he's going to show film of the players around the league, it's about measuring up, and that's what you do. You measure yourself up and counter what other people are doing in the league, and I just really appreciate how he's coming across. And again, here I go getting amped up, so going in another season.
It's all right. Slow your roll. There's work to be done, but he did. You bring up a great point, and I thought, sitting in that room listening to Ray Horton talk, that is what good teams do. And as I've mentioned, just eavesdropping, walking around the building, I always stop to see what's going on in the defensive meeting room since they're so, available to us because of the renovations. And 75% of the film that we've been watching is of other teams, of Seattle's defense, of Arizona's defense, of Pittsburgh's defense, of everybody else.
Yeah.
And some of that may be evaluation. I don't technically know what they're watching. They might be watching, a free agent or a certain player or a certain technique in a certain scheme, but all of it is making you better. And I think if I were to ask any question to Ray Farmer, I'm sorry, Ray Horton. Wow. Randall's gone. And we may or may not get him
tomorrow.
Tomorrow is Ray Horton going to is he going to be able to fit guys into his scheme, or does his scheme have to fit guys? Because answering that question will allow me to understand how much work is needed to be done by the time they take the field in early September.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what strikes me just listening to him and for you and I, you know, as you said, with the renovations, we're closer to the coaching staff than we've ever been.
Yep.
And we have a lot of access to them. We're able to talk to them and observe what they're doing. The difference in experience, the difference in understanding the National Football League, the difference in understanding the AFC North compared to what has been here previously is unbelievable.
Significantly different.
I really think that if, for example, 2 years ago, if they had been able to get the right head coach, if let's say it was Hugh Jackson and you had Hugh Jackson, Norv Turner, and Ray Horton as the Browns had, because those were pretty good coordinators
then. You might still have them.
Yeah, I think that you would have had that continuity. I think, but the good news is, I feel like everything that happened to the Browns the last few years has happened for a reason, and now you've arrived at the point where you have got, you know, you've got Hugh Jackson, you've got Pep Hamilton, Al Saunders, Kirby Wilson. I mean, think about the experience there on the offensive side with Hugh. You've got now Ray Horton on the defensive side. You've got, you know, Sashi and Dee Podesta and you know, the ascension of Ken Kovach, which happened over the weekend, to a bigger role, which I think is a good thing. Ken Kovach is a very, very bright man. I just think that all the things had to happen so that you could get this team where it needs to be poised for success, and I think that's where the Browns are now. And I think, you know, Ray Horton's first go-around here, it was a big change from what they've been doing before. That's when they moved from the 4-3 to the 3-4. So you never really got to see where it could get into year two. So it
that was DeQuell left that prior to that season, correct? And Robertson played the Mike position in a 3-4 defense, right?
Robertson played a ton that year. I believe DeQuell was still here because I think we traded DeQuell out for Dansby.
Okay.
So DeQuell was still here.
Yeah, you're right. So it was DeQuell and Robertson was a very young player at that point in his career.
And he was in this scheme at that time.
He's
being
the playmaker.
Asked to cover and do things that he was
That's
not.
That's the Reggie Bush?
He was.
The Reggie Bush year?
Yes. The Detroit Lions game. Exactly. That was the Brandon Whedon backhanded flip game, too. He just was not ready to cover in that manner and to be up to that kind of a task in that defense in 2013.
So that all being said, understanding the Ray Horton defense, who is going to be that guy for the Cleveland Browns now?
Kirksey.
Is it Christian Kirksey?
I think, and you heard him talk about that, and heard him talk about, you know, yep, that he's going to be a starter and that he needs to improve, and he's a guy that can make plays. I think he's going to get the opportunity to do that. I think that's going to be where they're going to have him be that kind of Will who makes the plays for you and moves around. But what he needs to be able to do that next to him is a true thumper. Now, I love what Carlos Dansby does for this team. I just don't know if with the current regime, at his age, at his price, the guaranteed money is out of his deal, if he's going to be here. And if he's not, I think that it will be imperative on this coach, on this front office, to get that thumper in the 3-4 that you always talk about.
I agree. I agree with you, and not necessarily to defend Carlos Dansby, but I would imagine, and I would say this if Carlos Dansby was sitting right here, that Carlos Dansby didn't necessarily fit the old scheme as well as he would fit this scheme. Because this scheme is very player-friendly. It's not fit wherever you want to fit. And I think that's when a player's age and a player's inability to be as physical or as fast to the point actually works against them. And in this case, because he's got one job or one read and not reading multiple players and playing the play, it takes one step out of it that actually allows a veteran like Carlos Dansby, because he's seen all the run schemes, he's seen all the formations, you know, so many times in his career, that having one job and one thing to focus on, he doesn't necessarily have to be overly fast or overly physical. You know, it kind of goes back to your point about the quarterback. Quarterback who has it in his head can play a very long time. That's what we may have in Dansby. But I understand eventually you want to get someone in that role behind him or competing for that role, because Dansby is in the last year of his contract and only getting older from year to year.
He is more of a playmaker.
Correct.
Than he is that thumper. Our guy Disco Puma says Casanova McKenzie equals thumper. So if Casanova McKenzie makes his way to the Browns, great name, and he would be a thumper. But I think, again, we know from my talk on this show what a big Dansby fan I am, and I don't think Dansby history regards Dansby at the level he should. His numbers are right there with Brian Urlacher's. They're right there with Ray Lewis's. So he's a tremendous playmaker, and I do believe that Carlos Dansby is one of the best at his position, despite the lack of recognition in terms of Pro Bowls he's gotten over his career. You just see when you look at him right now, a guy, $6.5 million against the cap this year. If they cut him after June 1st, they'd get a $5 million savings on that because he has the prorate signing bonus, just $1,500, that's what, or $1.5 million. That's what they would be on the hook for in this season. 34 years of age. Can he continue to do it? Nobody keeps himself in better condition. He certainly does that. But will he be a part of what this new regime is looking for in terms of their franchise building?
Right.
That will be interesting. Great guy. I hope he's here. But I don't know what's going to end up happening with Carlos Dansby going forward. All right, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. When we come back, part two of defensive coordinator Ray Horton here on CBD.